Does the conventional medical world think you're radical?
Type 2 diabetes.
High blood pressure.
Coronary artery disease.
It's one thing to talk about prevention. It's another thing to talk about reversal.
Every one of these diseases is curable. Every single one of them.
But you'll get real about why they're sitting in front of you, doctor.
Dr. Michael Clapper, author, health educator,
speaker, and gifted medical practitioner.
We went into medicine to relieve suffering.
Do you think it's going to change?
Oh, it is changing.
Plant-based nutrition done right. Every medical student, every physician should see these diseases go away, to see lupus go away, high blood pressure disappear, type 2 diabetes. These are reversible diseases.
Well, if you like eggs, this is some good news. You may not have to shy away from them anymore. A new government study finds they're actually 14% lower in cholesterol.
Well, the American Heart Association gets significant amounts of money from the egg industry, and it's reprehensible. It's embarrassing. Let them think that I'm radical, that my patients get healthy right before their eyes and my eyes. I don't know any cardiologist who can really say my patients are getting healthier.
Hi, my name is Joe Best, and welcome to Plant-Based News, and we have a fantastic episode with you today, Dr. Michael Clapper, who is another plant-based hero of mine. He discovered the secret to disease reversal over 40 years ago, and he turned that into a career of promoting a plant-based lifestyle, not only to patients, not only to centers, but also directly into the heart of the medical establishment. And this is a phrase that you're generally not allowed to say, disease reversal, and yet he has been saying it for a very long time. And in this interview, we are going to explore the moment that he had this awakening about how disease is caused and what the solution is, and then the trial and tribulations of his journey to share this message with as many people as he possibly can, and then finally, what is his vision of the future for the health of this planet. But not only that, on the way, there's going to be some amazing health tips that you can take and apply to your life today. So with that said, stick with us to the end, enjoy this riveting conversation, and let's hear from the great Dr. Michael Clapper. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
Thank you. Lovely to be with you and your viewers.
Excellent. It's my pleasure. So the first question I'd like to ask you is, I came across your work many years ago, maybe 15 years ago. It was so long ago, it was like a Square video. And it was you showing the effects of eating a high-fat animal meal and a plant-based meal. And you had two tubs of the blood after that experiment. What was that moment like for you? Because for me, it was so eye-opening. What was it like when you first discovered that?
Oh, well, it happened over the course of about 72 hours. I was working as a resident in anesthesiology in Vancouver, and I was on the cardiovascular anesthesia service, and we were dealing with people's hearts and blood vessels. And a patient who was scheduled for surgery in a couple of days for a four-vessel bypass needed some blood drawn, and the nurse asked me if I would draw his blood. And so I did. I drew the blood and got busy on the wart. And when I went back to get the blood tube to take it down to the laboratory, I looked at it, and the serum, the liquid part of the blood floating on top of the clot, was, it should be crystal clear yellow. His was thick and greasy white. It looked like glued and stuck to the sides of the tube when I shook it. I went back and I said, when you were out with your family on this day pass, did you stop for anything on the way to eat? And he said, yes. I said, what'd you have? He said, I had a double cheeseburger and a milkshake. I love that. And I realized what I was looking at was all the fat in the beef burger, the butter fat and the cheese, the egg yolk and the mayonnaise and the bun, and all the fat that he'd eaten oozed out into his blood and turned his blood fatty. Well, 3 days later, we have him on the operating table, and the surgeon opens up his chest and opens up the arteries in the heart and pulls this yellow, thick, rubbery gunk out of his arteries called atherosclerosis. And the light went on. And it was a matter of where that was coming from. It was quite clear. And variations of that started showing up in all my patients. You know, the German philosopher Goethe said, what you know about, you see. And once you know about something, you start seeing it. And once right. I realized it, I started seeing it in all my patients. So it really announced itself in a very dramatic way in that way.
And what was it like in terms of the environment you was in? Because this was a long time ago, right? This is a good 45 years ago or something. Did you feel like I should not say anything, or like I should tell absolutely everyone?
Wonderful question. Just being a second year anesthesia resident, I in this time when it was just a matter of bad, what's the cause of this? Oh, just bad genetics and too many T-bone steaks. But of course, it's more than T-bone steaks. So I basically chose route A. There, I kept my mouth shut. This was so intimidating. But again, you know, like the emperor has no clothes. Here I was working with these surgeons, pulling the stuff out of their arteries, thinking that they're curing these patients. And they're really not, you know, there's Band-Aid medicine. It was excruciating. So much so that within a year, I left anesthesia training. I went back to general practice. It just was so discordant for me not to be able to act on this very powerful information.
Yeah, because how I kind of imagine it, it's like the weight of the medical establishment is now against you in some way, rather than before you probably felt supported by it. Now suddenly it's like, oh, this is a problem. And so you went into practice to access patients directly.
Yes.
And what kind of results did you start to see?
Oh, it was dramatic. Not everybody who you give your advice to follows it, as every doctor knows. But those who could, I found I had changed my own diet. I went to a whole food plant-based diet. My body responded dramatically. Within 12 weeks, a 20-pound spare tire of fat melted off my waist. My high blood pressure went to normal. My high cholesterol went to normal. I felt great waking up in a light, lean body every day, despite eating all these wonderful curries and chilies and filling foods. So I said, this I need to share with my patients. So I left anesthesia. I went back into general practice. And instead of putting people to sleep as for my career, I went back to try and wake them up. And so I found people in near my office who were experienced plant-based chefs. I would send my patients to them to learn how to make simple breakfast, lunches, and dinners. And those who could follow that dietary style achieved the same wonderful results I did. They lost weight, their high blood pressures went down, their high blood sugars went down. And I was able to do things I was told you're not supposed to do in medicine, namely stop people's insulin. Well, they no longer had diabetes. You have to stop their insulin or they're going to go hypoglycemic on you. And the same thing with my high blood pressure folks. I'm getting calls saying, I'm standing up and my blood, I'm getting lightheaded. I feel like I'm going to pass out because they're on these potent medicines for high blood pressure that they no longer have. They've lost 20 pounds, their arteries are opening up, and they don't have high blood pressure. And so I said those fateful words, stop your blood pressure pills. Well, when I said those words, I looked around, I thought there'd be a puff of smoke and the ghost of my internal medicine professor would say, what did you say? Stop it, blood pressure pills. No, this is a lifetime medication. This is the dogma that we're taught. But truth is, he doesn't have the disease anymore. It's not ethical to keep him on a potent medicine he doesn't need. He's going to get in trouble. So medicine changed completely. My patients started getting healthy. I wasn't prepared for that, but the med school didn't really do that. But they started getting healthier. I get to discontinue these medicines. I turned into the happiest doctor I know. And now I just want to share that with the young medical students so they understand that as well.
How long did it take you to be confident to use the phrase disease reversal?
Oh, boy. I felt it in my clinical intuition, but I must admit it wasn't until I joined the American College of Lifestyle Medicine 10, 12 years ago that those two words started showing up in the same sentence, disease reversal. As soon as I saw it, I said, yes, that's what I've been seeing. And again, I wish someone had told me when I was a med student, these are reversible diseases. Type 2 diabetes can go away. High blood pressure can be reversed. That changes everything if you understand what you're looking at when you walk into the patient's room. So again, I'm giving that message to the students that I'm giving them the lecture I wish someone had given me 50 years ago. that these are reversible diseases.
What do you think is the common factor in the people that take your advice and apply it?
Oh my, there's a whole range of factors. We human beings, we're complex folks, and we're pulled back by our comfort foods and our fears and what we read on the internet and family members who take it as a threat if you start eating differently, and you get all sorts of grief from spectators. There's a lot of resistance people run into, but those who actually make the change, a couple of things happen. It all comes down, they're ready to make the change. Now, how do they get there? Some of them just had a hellacious health scare. They were in the emergency room that weekend with chest pain and hints of a heart attack. Oh boy, that gets their attention. That motivates folks really in a big way. But some folks, their kids have been telling, they got teenage kids who are saying it's bad for the environment and it's bad for the animals. How can you be eating this? And so I had a few parents say, you know, my kid's right. And I started eating like they did and I feel great. And so they just put their toe in the water and got the benefits from it. So everybody's different. And you've got to be a sensitive physician. Shut up and listen to where everybody is at and work with their strengths. And there's a whole art to motivating people to eat in this different way. But it's really not that hard. It's just food, and it tastes great. And you can eat all you want. And so there's a lot of good selling points on it, too.
Do you have any advice for people that don't get or maybe don't get as fast results? In my own example, I was diabetic quite strongly. And when I first started trying the high carb, low fat path, I would just get blood sugar spikes, which would panic me back into a low fat version of a vegan diet. And I do know some people carry extra weight. They're not so many, but there's a subset of vegans that like, well, I didn't lose the weight. So what advice do you have for people who are maybe a bit slow to respond?
Yes, my heart goes out to folks who've got that metabolic set that their genetics gives them a muscular square body there that really holds on to muscle, fat, all sorts of tissue. They've got a metabolic inertia in their tissues. And it's hard to get it going as far as weight loss goes. There is usually a collection of 5 to 8 pounds of fat in the abdomen that needs to slowly be melted away. And so what's the way to do it? Just talking the physiology here, outside of reality here. If I took a person like you and locked them up at True North Health Center for 90 days and put you on a diet of vegetable juices and soups and salads and steamed vegetables, and that's it. No starches, no legumes, lentils you could have. But certainly no breads or flour products at all, no nuts, et cetera. For a good 60 days, 90 days, the body would have no choice but to reach into your stored fat and you'd come out trim. So, and that would change everything. Your diabetes would be gone. That would change everything. Now, that's pretty radical. It's doable. It's just food, just juices and soups, et cetera. But man, that's a hard thing to do in this world. So, but how about 2 weeks of that or 3 weeks of that? 2 weeks of it every other month, do a real intensive fast for as long as you can, 7 days, 10 days. We're not talking about water fasting here. You could do this for 5 days to start with, 3 days, 5 days, and bite off literally, what you can really chew there. And then start lengthening them, every month, add a couple days to that, a really lean, clean, intensive, and eventually would come off. Perseverance furthers, as the I Ching says there.
That is really, really solid advice, because the advice that I kept coming across was quite extreme, like long fasting or just juice fasting. And what I would find is it would work, but then I would rebound. And it's really interesting because the natural path that I ended up going along was what you're saying. I called it above ground vegetables. I'm just going to eat above ground vegetables, steamed and souped. And that started to work. So it's really great to hear that confirmation. And the other thing I want to add to that was, what about mindset? Because I feel that what some people do is they go on a plant-based diet and then they have this mindset like, I've already given up everything else, so now I want to have my vegan treats. But you can't make a deal with the body. So what do you say to people who have that mindset?
Absolutely. You know, who are you kidding at this point? You know, your body is never not looking. I mean, you can't tell your body, look over here and have a vegan cheeseburger there. What was that? I didn't do anything. You know, who are you kidding? You know, your liver knows, your arteries know, your metabolism knows. So Shakespeare should have said, to thine own health be true. He didn't, right. But Dr. Clapper just said it. And, you know, it's really, that's who you have to answer to. But we're human. And if once a month or whatever you want to have a big sloppy veggie burger with vegan cheese, go ahead and do it. The lightning won't come out of the sky and strike you down. It's better than feeling deprived that you're in nutritional jail. They can't, you know, you're afraid to eat something. Eating should not be a fear-filled, anxiety-producing event. You know, it's joyful nourishment. So keep it as clean as you can. And they walk every day, and thank heavens you're alive, and you work on it.
Does the conventional medical world think you're radical?
Yep, they probably do. I think they're radical too. And it's right. Sad. You know, they're all right in front of them. I have a slideshow in my slide in my presentation to the medical students at the end saying, knowing how reversible the diseases that you're going to spend the majority of your careers treating, know how reversible they are with a whole food plant-based diet. Question, you want to heal these patients or you just want to manage their chronic disease? Well, you know, why are you going into medicine, really? You want to heal them? Then get real about why they're sitting in front of you, doctor, overweight, hypertensive, diabetic and inflamed from what they're running through their bloodstream every 4 hours. You want to deal with that truth or don't you? If you don't, then you're just going to manage their chronic disease and you're going to leave medicine. It's a dismal way to practice medicine. They all get fatter and sicker and clogged up and have their strokes and their heart attacks. And I should have sent them to the cardiologist earlier. No, the cardiologist wouldn't have made any difference, really. So, let them think that I'm radical, but my patients get healthy right before their eyes and my eyes. I don't know any cardiologist who can really say my patients are getting healthier.
Why do you think basically a scientific community, which is the medicine community, can look at something that's so obvious and say, oh, it's genes, it's random, it's we don't know why?
A man sees what he wants to see, hears what he wants to hear. You know, it's so locked in. I ask my colleagues, you taught your patients about nutrition. I said, listen, I don't know anything about nutrition. I was never taught it. I don't have time to do that counseling. I don't get paid to do that counseling. Don't bother me. It's enough for me to not miss their impending stroke and send them to the neurologist. So there's this inertia that hear no evil, see no, hear no nutrition, see no nutrition. It comes down to that. And it's sad and it's tragic. People are dying on real operating tables from operations they don't really need that could be fixed in the outpatient clinic with a referral to the plant-based dietitian and get these people eating healthy. And that's why I'm going to the medical schools and reach the first, second, third year of medical students before pharmacosclerosis sets into their brains and they think that drugs and surgery are the only treatments. It's the food. So start with one. That's why they're sitting in front of you. Get them on a plant-based diet, and these people get leaner and healthier right in front of you. And there are plant-based dietitians who will do this counseling for you, doctor. You don't have to do it. Send them to the plant-based dietitian. Let her do the counseling. You see them back in a month and see if they're not healthier.
So that's answered one of my questions, because I was thinking, is it because they don't want to get engaged with the person? Like if I just have to give a body medicine, that's a different function to having to encourage someone to adopt a lifestyle change. But you answered that because you said they can just hand them over to somebody else who wants to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, there's going to be more and more plant-based dietitians who will do this counseling for you. All the doctor has to do is to recognize the person sitting in front of them has a diet-based condition. You got to be diplomatic and honest with the patient. Would you like to work on, because the patient knows that they're 30 pounds overweight and they're huffing and puffing going up the steps. And if you ask, would you like to get yourself in a leaner, more fit body and get off these statins and try them? Most of them say, sure. Well, I want you to see Miss Jones down the hall. She's going to talk to you about what to eat. She's going to give you some handouts. She's going to show you some videos. She's going to meet you at the store on Saturday, take you shopping through the produce department. You eat like she's telling you, and you come back and see me in a month. Let's see if you're not leaner and healthier. Let's see if we can get you off some of these medications. That's how medicine should be practiced in the 21st century. And pull the dietitian onto your primary care treatment team. When you first see the patient in the outpatient clinic, doesn't matter what specialty you're in, obstetrics, urology, pediatrics, emergency, doesn't matter. You're all seeing Mr. and Mrs. America, overweight, diabetic, hypertensive, clogged up and inflamed from what they're eating. All these folks will benefit, after you see the doctor. He does doctor things, take a medical history, do a physical exam, order your labs. That's how medicine's practiced. But then before you let the patient leave, say, I want you to see Mr. Wilson in 423 over there. He's the plant-based dietitian. Eat like he's telling you and come back and see me. That's the model that you should have. When you get out in practice, no matter what specialty you're in, get a dietitian that you can refer to and let him or her really help these patients get healthy.
Because what you're saying here is really close to my own heart, because I was remembering when I first got diagnosed with diabetes, my blood sugar was like 20 or like 800 in US units. And they put me into the hospital. And then in the morning, they gave me like cereal, Frosties, toast. I would eat that. Then a different nurse would come and take my blood sugar and say it's high. Then another nurse would give me insulin. And I said, is there anything I can do? And they give you this lecture. It's probably softer now, but back then it was like, there's nothing you can do. You're diabetic for life. It's only going to get worse. And I said, well, is there some kind of diabetic meal plan? And they said, no, just eat normal food, but take this. And it went on for about 3 days. And I checked myself out. I just said, I'm not staying here. So I'm just reflecting. If someone had said to me, it's okay, you can reverse this. This is about your habits. Let's get you to a nutritionist. It would have just changed my life. So it's really important, the work you're doing.
It's embarrassing. And it's one of the chief emotions I feel when I'm in front of the audience. As a physician, as a scientist, boy, we can identify a genetic mismatch on gene A21 on chromosome 13. Boy, we can home in on that with precision. But the thought that cheeseburgers and pepperoni pizzas and buffalo wings might be clogging up our patients' arteries, this is too abstruse a concept for most of my colleagues. It seems it's embarrassing already. Yes, it's almost dishonest, because most of them know that that is the standard American diet. Very often my presentations, I wind up apologizing for my profession to everybody out there who ran into a doctor that was completely nutritionally ignorant, as most of us are. I sincerely apologize. Nobody told us about this. And you folks are suffering the consequences of that, for which I apologize. But we're trying to make it better by getting this word out.
Well, I'm also grateful for all the people that you have touched. And as I said, I did come across your video eventually. So it's great to have the information out there. Do you think it's going to change, or is it changing?
Oh, it is changing. And there's some powerful forces, because it's easy to be cynical. And most of my colleagues say, America, they're never going to change what they eat. It's a waste of time. Don't bother. They're not going to give up their. But a lot of things are different now. One, there's so much social media, for good or bad, and a lot of it is bad. But the word is out that plant-based eating is a healthy thing to do. Nobody's really, there's a few folks, but by and large, it's a generally white hat, good guy concept. Yeah, eat more plants. Everybody agrees with that. But the real power behind it is the medical truth of it, that these reversible diseases, and there's going to be more and more articles in every medical journal about reversal of hypertension with plant-based diets, reversal of type 2 diabetes, plant-based diets, reversal of autoimmune disease, plant-based diets. It's infiltrating into the literature. So that's a powerful force. But also the money, the insurance companies, especially the folks that are self-insured, these big corporations who have to pay out for every coronary bypass, for every stent that's placed. It's in their benefit to help their patients get healthier. And there's going to start being there are hospitals that give lower rates for people who, you know, come in there or who agree to eat a plant-based diet. There's ways to incentivize people's eating habits there. You can take money off their income tax bill if they're not over their ideal body weight, if they've got normal blood pressure and cholesterol. You can drop their income tax by 15 or 20%. There's ways to motivate patients, and money will be saved. There's also a concept of quality-based medical care. For every time some executive in a, some chief executive officer in a corporation in town goes down with a heart attack or a stroke, it's a catastrophe for the company. The production goes down. They have waste money finding a new CEO, etc. So for every CEO that doesn't have a heart attack in a given 10-year period, the insurers who are going to pay for his $250,000 bypass are sitting on that money. They should give the doctor $10,000 for keeping his patient healthy, give the patient $10,000 for staying healthy. There's ways to, and the insurance company still winds up making money. There's ways to jiggle the way the bean counters can jiggle the way the beans are flowing to reward people and doctors for promoting good health. And so it can be done, and I think it's going to be done, mostly just to save money from the big corporations. But fine, anything that gets us there, I'm okay with the motivation.
But that seems to be the most likely path forward, because there just is so much money invested in the current system of ill health. I sometimes ask myself, if all doctors became like you, or many doctors become like you, what would the other doctors do?
Yes, and I run into that. Are there too many cardiologists? Possibly, but they would go into community cardiology, or they would go into congenital heart disease, or they would go to the third world medicine, or they wouldn't be out on the street with a tin cup. You know, medicine has to change. You know, what happened to the buggy whip makers when automobiles came in? Well, they wound up doing something else. Well, what about the heart? Pooners on the whaling ships, you know, when the whaling, you wind up doing something else. And the industry is always adjusting to demand and supply. And medicine will do it too. And it shouldn't be a reason saying that, no, you're threatening my job, I'm opposed to it. If we're for the patients, then we have to be truly for them. Mm.
So, Dr. Clapper, I have a document I want to share with you and get some advice and opinion on. Basically, this is the health practitioner's download from Incredible Eggs, and it's advice to health practitioners on how to view eggs and how to discuss eggs. So I'll just read some quotes from it and you can respond if that's okay. So the first thing it says is, eggs can be included as part of a healthy, heart-healthy diet for adults, according to the American Heart Association.
Well, the American Heart Association gets significant amounts of money from the egg industry, and they are certainly going to say that, oh, you absolutely can fit it into a heart-healthy diet because everybody else is dropping dead from heart attack. And if you eat eggs, you won't have much higher risk of dropping dead from heart attack than most everybody else does. So it's probably okay for you to eat. And that's the lukewarm endorsement that they give it. As far as room in a healthy, heart-healthy diet, I think it's an oxymoron.
So common knowledge hasn't caught up with decades of science. Science says that eggs do not impact heart health. Eggs are nutrient-rich and widely acknowledged to be part of a healthy diet for every age and stage.
And the egg industry is notorious for using So quoting medical studies that have been done by researchers hired by the egg industry who set up conditions to make it look like the eggs aren't harmful. They give a person three eggs a day for a couple of weeks, saturate their body with cholesterol, they get a high level, and then they give them one more egg to eat. And the cholesterol level doesn't go up at all. And they say, see, Eggs don't raise your cholesterol. And they've already preloaded the patient so badly with saturated fat cholesterol that one more egg doesn't make a difference. So they can say, see, it doesn't raise your cholesterol. And this has been called out by numerous researchers. And it's reprehensible. It's embarrassing.
I didn't know they went to that extreme.
Well, read the study. This was not a low-fat cholesterol, egg-free diet these folks were on. They were eating eggs all along. And then they added one more. Nothing so bad happened.
If you're already eating loads of eggs, one more egg isn't going to be a problem.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's really what's behind those studies. But they'll say, see, it doesn't raise your cholesterol. It's already healthy.
Wow. I think you'll like this one. Brain health. Choline helps support lifelong brain health at every age and stage, including memory, thinking, mood, and more. Eggs are one of the most concentrated sources of choline in the American diet.
Indeed it is. However, one, there's plenty of other plant-based sources of choline. It's abundant in beans and seeds, flax seeds, etc. But the problem is too much choline. The problem is you eat a couple of eggs a day, you keep dropping these bolts of choline down your gut. You're going to summon up microbes in your intestine that love to see that choline coming in because they turn it into a molecule called trimethylamine that your liver oxidizes to trimethylamine oxide, TMAO. This is a molecule from hell. This drives cholesterol into the artery walls, keeps your good HDL from pulling that out. It promotes artery disease. This is what concentrated choline in the diet summons up in your gut. This is not heart healthy. This eventually leads to heart attacks and strokes. So again, to say, aha, choline is good for you, and we have lots of choline, does not tell the story. You really don't want to be eating lots of choline.
So choline does help with brain health.
If it does, it's just part of many nerve cells have choline involved in the myelin sheath. Yes, it's part of the structure of nerve cells. As I said, you get plenty of choline out of plant-based foods. Right. Vegans are not short of choline. It's in all the nuts and seeds and beans. So it's not an issue. And the choline from an egg, say an egg white, is a concentrated bolt of it. It's going to have an effect on the microbiome. It's going to change microbes in the gut there, where the little bit of choline that's sprinkled through the flax seeds and the beans aren't going to have that kind of effect on your microbiome. They're two different food sources.
So they take the positive aspects of a particular nutrient and then they use it to mask the damage that's being done by having it through
animal food. Well said. So,
weight management. Eggs fill the tank without breaking the calorie bank. With 6 grams of high-quality protein, eggs can help you feel satisfied, which can help you maintain a healthy weight.
Well, it's all the fat in the egg yolk. The yolk of a hen's egg is the most concentrated glom of fat and cholesterol on the planet. It's made to run a baby chicken for 21 days with no outside energy. And when you drop a couple of those down into your stomach, your blood turns fatty. You get lots of fat in the blood. Now, if you are eating the fat with sugar, like a piece of toast with your egg in the morning, that fat-sugar combination put you at risk for weight gain. And when the sugars from the bread and the fat enter the blood at the same time, your body says, ooh, sugars, fat, let's burn the sugars, let's store that fat for later. And so that egg yolk fat winds up contributing to obesity as well as clogging up your insulin receptors, increasing the risk for diabetes. Now, they don't want to talk about that. They just said it increases your satiety, makes you feel full. Yeah, but it's also going to make you pre-diabetic and more obese. So to think that they're doing good things in your body, again, it's marketing, but it's not scientifically based.
This reminds me of something I heard you say. I'm not very good with technical terms, but it was something like the way the body prioritizes calorie usage. And if you give it carbs and fats, it will burn the carbs and store the fats. What's that term called again?
Right, that's called oxidative priority. Your mitochondria would rather burn sugars. And so if you give your body sugar and fat at the same time, pour oil on your pasta, put jelly, peanut butter and jelly on your toast. You're creating that fat sugar combo. When they enter the body, the sugar gets burned and the fat gets stored. And that's just what egg yolks do, or eggs do, because who eats it without some kind of carbohydrate?
I've never seen anybody eat an egg without toast.
Right, exactly.
So rare.
It's so fattening for that reason.
Okay. Bone health. Eggs are one of the only foods that naturally has vitamin D, which, along with calcium, is critical for building and maintaining strong bones.
Well, no one says that you need vitamin D in your food. Vitamin D is made by walking out in the sunshine in your shirt sleeves and letting the good old sun fall on your skin. You make your own vitamin D. Nowadays, if you want some vitamin D, they add it to soy milk. They add it to most multivitamins. Yeah, but there's no reason to eat an egg and put a big bolt of fat and cholesterol and choline into your bloodstream just because you want some vitamin D. It's a really silly rationalization for eating a food that causes more damage in your body than does good.
All right. Okay. There's two more. Muscle health. Eating high-quality protein like eggs in combination with carbohydrates post-workout can help refuel muscles and optimize recovery.
Maybe it can, but again, it's loaded with saturated fat and cholesterol. It's going to damage my arteries. If you want some protein and fat after a workout, then have a hummus sandwich. Have a couple of scoops of last night's lentil stew. Have a tofu sandwich. There's no reason you have to go eat the egg of a chicken. And I think you're far better off if you don't.
Okay, last one. Eye health. Lutein and zeaxanthin are carotenoids found in egg yolks that can help protect eyes from blue light.
Maybe so, but again, why damage your arteries just because you want to take good care of your eyes, which, by the way, have tiny little arteries that you don't want to be plugging up? That's the door to macular degeneration, all sorts of retinal problems. If you want some heart healthy nutrients there, that's what yellow vegetables are about. That's what carrots and squash and sweet potatoes are full of, zeaxanthin and carotenoids. The old idea that carrots are good for night vision, although there's really truth in that. And you could certainly get those nutrients out of a whole food plant-based diet with lots of dark green and yellow vegetables in there. So again, why poison your arteries just to get some nutrients that you can get out of yellow vegetables?
So what strikes me from this is that it's effortlessly refutable by you. So what is the mindset behind an entity that creates a document like this to spread into the doctosphere?
Of course, you know, it basically all comes down to the venality of money, of people willing to say anything in order to increase their bottom line profits, even if it hurts the health of their customers. If it increases the profits they can show to their stockholders, sell them anything. And people do like the, you know, bacon and eggs, you know, it's a intense flavor on the tongue that we grew up with. It's a comfort food. And they're just taking the advantage of that and just beating that horse for all it's worth because it keeps putting money in their bank accounts. But to say that they're helping the health of the public is illusory, to say the least.
Do you think they, like, what I've, and I don't know if this is true, but what I've noticed is that obviously only some people, a high percentage, get very ill from these American foods. I mean, it's a lot of people. Let's not minimize it, but it's not everybody. Do you think that the people who produce this kind of stuff, maybe they don't eat as much, maybe they're getting by, maybe they're a bit younger, and they think, well, eggs are quite good. And I think this looks like, do you think it's rationalized the way to be able to produce this?
The toxicologists who deal with poisons, their adage is the dose makes the poison. You know, everybody can handle a little bit of arsenic. Take a lot of it, you're going to wind up in trouble. And yeah, if everybody had one egg a month, you probably wouldn't see any difference in statistics of death or mortality or morbidity, et cetera. That's true. And you can have a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And especially if these are younger people in your 30s, your 40s, your body, because you can get away with a lot of stuff. You don't really get away with it. But the body can handle a lot of abuse. Of course, it's cumulative. It catches up with you in your 60s and 70s. But But a lot of these younger researchers, whatever, can have these forbidden foods and nothing bad seems to happen to them. So then they're not half wrong in saying, you know, yeah, you can have some of a little bit of this. But at what point, you know, does the body blow the whistle on you and oops, you get that chest pain at 38? You know, where did that come from? Well, a little bit of cheating builds up on you there. So, yes, you can apparently get away with a lot. But it's just because the body's forgiving. But again, it usually catches up. We're seeing cancers in younger and younger people now. The statistics are all over the news. We're seeing heart attacks and strokes in younger people. Again, your body's never not looking. You know, you're not fooling anybody. So don't
let
one. These
things appear because of they're a bit irresponsible. It's like saying this steep slope is totally safe, but you're not catering for people who are elderly. You're just saying it's safe for everybody.
Yes. Well, good example. Very good. Good metaphor. Right.
Okay. So to end this one then, what would you say in an egg pamphlet to doctors?
Unless you're a baby chicken waiting to be hatched, you really have no use for the eggs of hens. And your body is better off without them, without all the saturated fat and cholesterol and choline. They are unbalancing foods in a diet that we're trying to balance. So ask any gorilla, eat plants, and you'll live a long, healthy, strong life.
So one of the things that you mentioned, which I don't hear so many other doctors mention, is about your discovery of ahimsa or your adoption of ahimsa, like a do-no-harm lifestyle. Do you think that's the kind of approach that might help, or is that just really way too radical for doctors to start think about taking on that approach? The reason why I mention it is because I was struggling to stay vegan until I also decided that I was going to approach it from a HIMSA attitude. So I put myself back a little bit and focused on not causing harm to animals, and that helped no end in my dedication.
Good for you. What a beautiful story. And that's the truth of it. When you asked a while back what motivates people to change, as I said, some of them coming through the health door, they've had a health scare or whatever. Some from the concern about the planet, we're cutting down the trees to make grazing land for cattle. And their teenage kids have on them to change for the sake of their kids' future. But then there's that other door, and that's the door of the heart where the truth of meat. You cannot put meat on the plate without killing some sentient being that loves its life as much as you and I do. And I spent my first 14 summers up on my uncle's farm, and I watched the violence involved in putting meat on the table. I chopped the heads off chickens. I saw the old dairy cows shot in the head. And it's violent. And I don't want to be part of it. I don't want to pay for it. I don't want to subsidize all the suffering from these hundreds of millions of chickens and cows and pigs and turkeys in these massive factory farm sheds. I don't want to pay for that. They're living lives of agony. And you don't have to. You know, rice and beans don't complain. And I've never heard a carrot scream. And I feel so much better when I lay my head down on the pillow at night, knowing that I haven't contributed to the death of sentient beings any more than, you know, it's inevitable. Surely to grow my kale here, I'm sure that a couple of earthworms and grasshoppers got cut up in a mower of some sort. But it wasn't intentional, and it wasn't cutting down vast forests to make grazing land for cattle so I can have one small piece of their muscle, involving the death of those cows as well. It's a totally different level of harm, of injury there. And so I want to minimize. I'm not going to fantasize that I cause no harm as I go through that.
Right.
I step on beetles, I'm sure. But I don't do it intentionally. I want to minimize the amount of damage that I do. And it starts with what I order in the restaurant and what I put into my shopping cart.
Right. Amazing. So what occurred to me just then was, how much of a responsibility is it for those of us that have had a recovery or even a reversal through a plant-based diet to actually go back to our old GPs? Because what I just realized is I exited the system Once I realized I could do it a different way, I haven't been to my doctor in over a decade. And I'm thinking, I'm visiting London soon. I should pop by and have a checkup and tell him my HbA1c is 5.6. So we have a response. You know what I mean? Like, we kind of leave the system. And I was thinking, maybe I have a responsibility just to go back and at least tell my former caregivers I did it this way.
You absolutely should do that. Quotes around should here, with the caveat that you have to be prepared that he's bah humbug. I'm not interested. Don't bother. Expect that that's going to be the result.
Yeah.
And be pleasantly surprised if he says, well, good for you, man. Well, tell me more about it. Well, tell me, did you see a book or did you read a book or see a movie? Tell me how you did this. That might be the response. And you might have a one sheet handout with forks over knives and what the health and, you know, some resources for the doctor to read. Just be light about it and see, but don't expect them to say, oh, thank you for enlightening me.
They're not going to, but it's, I just feel like it's planting seeds of evidence that are irrefutable. And all I was really seeing was, like, I just completely said, okay, I found a new way. Goodbye. And I think maybe if you're out there, you're trying to educate doctors, then why shouldn't the former patients?
Good for you. Absolutely, sir. I absolutely agree. What a power. Every doctor knows we learn the most from our patients, not from our professors. It's our patients are our best teachers. Well, man, you are a walking, powerful lesson for your GP. Yes, pay him a visit. Shake his hand.
I'm going to do that. So the last question, what is your vision for the future? In if all your work that you're doing comes to fruition in even more of a major way, because it's already pretty good, how do you see things being differently?
I see a far more plant-based kind of medicine where there's no fast food restaurants in the lobby of the hospitals, where the trays coming up from dietary are truly healthy, whole food, plant-based. And every young doctor has heard the message. Of course, I send my patients to the plant-based dietitian. Of course, I give my patients handouts. Of course, my patients are encouraged to eat plant-based, where it's no big deal anymore. And in fact, there's nothing left for me to do because they already know it. And that would be wonderful. I could go to my grave a happy, happy doctor. Yes, it's a more plant-based style of medicine, and we're getting there. It's by, I'm speaking at Harvard in 2 weeks by a remote, but the students are interested. They want that knowledge. I'm happy to share it with them. We'll make more plant-based medicine for everyone.
Yeah, that's amazing, because at the end of the day, everyone who goes into medicine has the patient's well-being. That's their motivation. So tap into that, that's going to, like, you just have to tap into that in a different way, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. No doctor's in for the money. They really want to help people. And the best thing I can do is set a good example, be plant-based yourself, and share this information with your patient, and you'll help save their lives. And that really is why we're all going into medicine.
Amazing. So thank you very much for this talk. I just wanted to say, how do people find out more about your work?
Oh, please go to our website. Go to drclapper.com. It's all spelled out, no spaces. I'm sure you'll have it in the show notes there. And if you want to find out about our work teaching medical students, and we could sure use your support, go to movingmedforward.com. So we have both of those website tags on the show notes there. And you can read all about what we're doing.
Amazing. Thank you for your work. Thank you for your dedication. And thank you for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was a great privilege. I really enjoyed it.